We're talking about engineering lab-grown livers and what the future holds for synthetic biology. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer. Ken, thanks for being here. Scientists are growing these so-called human liver organoids in 17 days, and when implanted into mice with failing livers, these lab-grown replacement livers show promise. What do you want to know about stem cell research in lab-grown organs? If they'd be available in the future, would you receive a transplant with one? It's 800-642-1234. Dr. Mo Ibrahim-Khani is an associate professor of pathology and bioengineering at the Pittsburgh Liver Research Center and the McGowan Institute for Regenerative Medicine at the University of Pittsburgh. Dr. Ibrahim-Khani, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thank you so much for your invitation.
Well, first, if you could help us with a bit of terminology, can you explain what an organoid is?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So basically, organoids are a group of cells that they are produced from stem cells, and they come together, they self-assemble together and generate in a three-dimensional format, generate a small tissue that reproduce some level of function or characteristic of the human organs. So it is similar to the native human organ. And in the size, it is a small. That is at the moment what we name it organoid. But the cells are self-assembled together and they are produced from a stem cell.
And organoids are really what you're working on in your lab.
Yes, organoids and also tissues, basically, that are generated from stem cells are some of our main focus in the lab.
So what have you found in growing these organoid livers? What are you finding?
Right. So basically, you mean how we generate these tissues or how we apply them to a study?
Yeah, start with how you make them. How do you produce them? Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. So these organoids or multi-cell type tissues that we generate in the lab, they are coming from induced pluripotent stem cells. These are stem cells that can produce any type of cells in our body. And we use them for generation of liver here. How we go about this is that we actually focus on a new approach using genetic engineering to be able to engineer these cells to go through the different step of development using genetic switches. And by these genetic switches, we kind of navigate the cells toward our final target cells and tissues, which is liver here. So by basically using different genetic circuits, you can generate different cell types, and these cell types assemble together, and we have vasculature, we have hepatocyte building blocks in the liver, and some of the other cell types.
So why do you genetically engineer them? Do you have more control through genetic engineering than you would in traditional ways of working with these stem cells?
Well, that's a really important question. Yes, I think you exactly actually point to the right angle here. What we think it is important here is when we generate tissues, artificial tissues in the lab, outside human body, we would like to have a control over when, how, and where to modulate the processes during the formation of the tissue. And even after implantation, you would like to have a control. For example, if a cell goes in the wrong direction, you have a control to kill or eliminate that cell, or even reroute it back to the right direction. Or if, for example, make it resistant against infectious disease. So for doing this, genetic engineering and genetic circuits would give us opportunity to basically incorporate these elements in our tissue with a design, basically generating tissues by design. And by doing that, you would be able to develop more control and navigate your cells at the time that you are interested in toward the final identities and final functions that you need to be done in an organ.
Could you then design an organ that is tailored directly to fit the type of organ you need for the person who is receiving that organ? Would those genetics come into play?
Sure. Partly they can play an important role. And basically the iPS cells or induced pluripotent stem cells, one of the main angle and advantage of them is that they are produced from the cells that are coming from the same individual. So their immunogenicity would be less than the cells that come from another individual. So that's an advantage. But apart from that, when you use genetic approaches, you can control that. You can design ways, for example, to target a specific elements that are important for activation immune system to make your product less immunogenic, less induce less stimulation. And this can be done at a different level. Depending on really the target design, you can start to think about how to come up with the best situation that decrease the immune response. And this is or would be appropriate for the patients or the individual of interest.
Yeah.
The thing here is it also depends on the application. So you depend on your application of interest. You can always tune this up and down.
Yeah, so you can really fine-tune here. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Dr. Mo Ibrahim Khani. He's an associate professor of pathology and bioengineering at the University of Pittsburgh, and he's explaining his research in the lab growing these organs, these organoids, and the possibilities of what can be done with this stem cell research. You can join in with your questions about this. If lab-grown organs are available in the future, would you accept them? What do you think are the most exciting possibilities that stem cell research has to offer? Join in at 800-642-1234. Dr. Ibrahim Khani, scientists are able to grow human cells and tissues, as you've said, in the lab using stem cells. But those tissues, often they have problems that keep them from being used in pharmaceutical studies or as transplant organs. What are the big obstacles? Why is that?
Well, there are a lot of promises and a lot of basically progress were made during the past years. But also, obviously, there are always with new technologies and new advances comes with some new challenges. One of the main challenges here in the context of, for example, using the tissues for drug discovery is that sometimes the tissues that are generated from stem cells are not mature enough. They are at the fetal stages, like a tissue that's coming from a fetus. It is not like a tissue that's coming from an adult human organ. And this challenge actually was one of the important motivation of our studies in the lab to use genetic engineering for further mature the tissue. And that was one of the actually core parts of our studies, that we could further improve the maturation of the tissue. If still we don't get a fully mature tissue, but we could improve that. We should provide a proof of principle that it is possible by using genetic engineering, you mature the tissue. So I think maturation is one of the main challenges, that, ongoing challenges that we are working on to make sure that we generate a tissue that is quite similar to the final adult human liver or other organs.
And when you're talking about fully mature tissue and regenerative tissue, you know, organs, of course, need a blood supply to stay alive. Yeah. Do these lab-grown organs have blood vessels, and are they also grown from stem cells?
Right, right. So that's exactly one of the other angles. When we use genetic engineering, we could actually generate multiple cell types, including the vessels at the same time, and these cells and structure assembled together. So the tissue that we generated were vascularized. And that is another actually angle that is important in the field of organoids, that for being able to make the tissue to perfuse, get nutrients and oxygen after the implantation, You need to have those vascular structures there. And we could actually get those vascular structures using this approach. And so this is basically the second challenge. One was maturation. Second is the vascularization, that they go hand in hand.
Yeah.
Kind of generation of the pure tissue, that you don't have any aberrant unwanted cell type. That is another challenge, to make sure that you have a fully clean tissue. And we could also get some improvement in that area when we use our approach. What I should mention about our approach is that we did genetic engineering, but we collaborated with a scientist at Johns Hopkins University, Dr. Patrick Kahan, and also scientists at University of Pittsburgh, genetic engineer Dr. Samira Kiani. So we had a team to tackle this. For Dr. Patrick Kahan, we basically collaborated to do the computational analysis of the tissue and compare it with adult organs, and make sure that understand what is missing there when we compare a synthetic tissue with a native human liver. And then we identify potential targets that we should go after for genetic engineering. So
yeah.
In this way, we kind of make it a very, to some extent, unbiased approach.
Yeah. So a lot of computation going on there, a lot of collaboration. We're talking with Dr. Mo Ibrahim Kani, telling us about his research. It's published in the journal Cell Systems this month, and the promise of speeding up the growth of lab-grown organs, making them viable. What do you want to know about machine learning to reverse engineer genes to grow human organs? Are designer organoids, as we've been talking about, the future of medicine? Still time to hear from you, 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with Dr. Ibrahim Kani right here on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with University of Pittsburgh pathologist Mo Ibrahim Kani about the potential for growing human liver organoids in the lab, replete with blood and bile handling systems. They've found that using genetic engineering, it's possible to reverse engineer a liver so that it functions like your normal adult human liver. Let's take a call on this. Bill is joining us from Wakefield, Michigan. Hi, Bill.
Hello. Thank you for what you do, and what a great topic. I have a friend now named Paulina that explained to me a couple of years ago about what she was doing in the process with liver growing with Dr. Atala at Wake Forest. I wonder if he was aware of him.
Oh, you mean the work going on at Wake Forest University in growing? Are they growing livers there? Do you know, Bill?
Well, he's in the process of that for children.
What is collaboration like, Dr. Ibrahim Kani, on this effort?
Yeah, I know about, I have heard about some of the efforts going at Wake Forest University, and I think several groups at different areas in U.S. and outside the U.S. and doing great work on the context of the organ engineering at different sizes. Some focus on a smaller scale organ engineering, and some in a larger size organ engineering. There are obviously many different challenges at different scales. For example, size of the tissue, scaling up of the tissue, the quality of the tissue, vasculature, scaffold. So many scientists from different disciplines trying to address these different areas. And collaboration, obviously, is going on quite a bit, depending on the project.
Dr. Ibrahim Kani, tell us about what happened with the mice, these mice that had liver disease, and you transplanted these lab-grown organs, these livers. What happened?
Right. So I would say that these tissues that we generate have a small size. So they are like, that's why we say, also we would say organoids. They are not like a big, like a chunk of liver. So we implant many of them together in a scaffold inside the body and then abdominal cavity, and then we monitor the mice after the liver disease, and we observe that actually the life expectancy and the survival of the mice improved, and that was quite promising for us. Obviously, we need to work further toward efficacy to make sure that these tissues are more effective and they can be more protective in the context of liver disease. And that's the target of our future studies.
Yeah, so very promising start. Let's bring in Ron now and Cameron with a question. Hi, Ron.
Hi, good morning. I think the doctor maybe just answered my question. I'm a biotech teacher, and a couple of years ago, our students and I, we read an article about, I think, this process and what scaffolding was, and I think it involved some type of animal stem cell, like sheep at that time, and I'm just wondering, are they human stem cells? Could you explain the scaffolding process just briefly in layman's terms? I'll take my answer off the air. I got to go to school. Bye.
Oh, bye. Thank you so much, and thanks for teaching. Go ahead, doctor.
Sure. Thank you for the question. So the approach that we use actually is a scaffold free. So we didn't use any scaffold. We let the cells to come together, assemble together, and self-organize. So that is actually one of the features that sometimes used in the context of the organoids. But there are other approaches that use a scaffold and then trying to fill the scaffold by cells that you produce separately, and they're trying to shape the cells and control how the cells organize together. So there's two different, basically, approach that exists out there. And what we did in this study, we didn't use any scaffold, so the scaffold-free and the cells were self-organized.
Okay, so because you could kind of mold those cells through the scaffolding approach, but you kind of let them freeform and let the cells do what they please in
exactly.
a way. Okay.
Yes, we wanted to actually exploit the self-organization capacity of the cells so they can talk to each other freely, communicate with each other, and make decisions. And we thought that if we put too much control on that angle, we may not get explore that type of self-organization in the best possible way to get the vasculature and the structure that we were interested in.
The second piece of Ron's question about where these stem cells come from, where the source is.
Human. That's the human stem cell.
Gotcha. Okay, so let's bring in Charlotte now in Milwaukee. Hi, Charlotte.
Hi, how are you doing this morning? I was just saying that two things. Well, one was, are they able to make kidneys? And then another thing was, when my husband had cancer and they removed his ear, they asked if they could have, I don't know exactly what they were asking for, but something with his smell so they could study. And it's funny that I asked them, I was jokingly asking the tech, are you going to make a human? And she answered very seriously. She said, I don't know.
Charlotte, thank you for those questions. First off, what about kidneys, Dr. Ibrahim Khani?
Sure. So thanks for the questions. There are efforts that are going on in generation of kidney organoids. Several studies, both in U.S. And also in outside U.S. in Europe and Australia, there are studies that focus solely on generation of the kidney organoids and kidney tissues using different approaches. So it is ongoing and also very promising.
So how far along are your livers versus what they're doing in growing kidneys and in the kidney development?
I think I would say in the context of using genetic engineering for programming tissues, this study was one of the very first ones to show that it is possible. I'm not aware of studies in kidney that have shown genetic approaches for programming and multicellular tissue similar to kidney.
Okay.
But obviously, other approaches were used for generation of kidney, and they are promising. Obviously, it would be of interest in future to see whether what we did for liver can be applicable to kidney or other type of organs.
We only have a short time left, but what is the next step toward achieving, you know, human livers in the lab? Where do you go next?
Yes, I think obviously one obvious part is a scale up, right? So you for mouse, you mean a small piece of tissue. For human, you need much larger size of the tissue for implantation or transplantation. So that is one of the main angles for future scaling up. Another part that I think would be very important and would be a focus of future years would be making sure about safety of the tissue, making sure that we have a full control over formation of the tissue and also monitoring of the tissue after implantation. So these are, I think, areas that would be important part of the studies for future, in addition to the fact that you can always make your tissue better and better to make it more effective.
Are you going to stay with using mice, or would you move on to something else?
We still have a little bit more work to do with mouse studies to make sure we can improve some of these angles. And obviously, after finding answers to those questions at this level, then we're going to move to the larger animals.
Okay, moving to the larger animals after mice. Dr. Ibrahim Khani, thank you for joining us and explaining your research.
Of course. It was my pleasure.
Dr. Mo Ibrahim Khani is an associate professor of pathology and bioengineering at the Pittsburgh Liver Research Center and the McGowan Institute for Regenerative Medicine at the University of Pittsburgh. We have a link to the study in the journal Cell Systems. It's at wpr.org/mornings. Just ahead, the host of Emily's Wonder Lab on Netflix, Emily Calandrelli, is here, brings us some wacky science experiments to do at home. Watch out, grown-ups. The volcanoes are erupting in T-minus 7 minutes. Seriously, this is going to be fun. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.